You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later, we'll find out what the future could hold for the state's prevailing wage law.
First, over the last few decades, jails in America have seen significant increases in population. On any given day, there are about 730,000 people locked up in American jails. That's more than triple the jail population of 1983, and it's costing quite a bit.
The United States Department of Justice estimated that local communities spent $22.2 billion on jails in 2011. But according to our next guest, communities are actually spending much more on jails, and policymakers and taxpayers may not be aware of everything that goes into the ongoing funding of jails. So how much are we actually spending, and are there ways to save some of that money?
Joining us now is Chris Henriksen. He's the director of the Cost-Benefit Analysis Unit at the Vera Institute of Justice and lead author of the new report, The Price of Jails, Measuring the Taxpayer Cost of Local Incarceration. Chris, thanks a lot for joining us.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
So in the past reports, you've tackled the costs of the nation's prison population. Why look at jails this time around?
Well, to start, often many confuse the difference between prisons and jails. Prisons are state-run and federally run facilities for those that have been sentenced of a crime, whereas jails are locally administered by counties and cities, and most of the inmates in jails have not yet been convicted of a crime. They're legally presumed innocent.
And as we mentioned, jail populations in America have soared in recent decades. Jails are holding three times as many people now as they were in 1983. And the big question there is why? What's changed?
Well, that's right. And there's 3,000 counties across the country, and in each county, the drivers of the increase in jail populations is going to vary. So in some places, it may be arresting practices. In other cases, it might be the length of court proceedings.
Now, where does the money come from to pay for jails?
Well, by and large, funding for jail almost exclusively comes from counties and cities' general funds. So the tax revenue that's drawn upon the local tax base, whether it's property tax or sometimes a local income tax, is funding the county and city jails. They are not state-funded, and they're not federally funded.
So for prisons, who funds prisons?
Prisons are almost exclusively funded by the state general fund. So the state income tax that one pays on an annual basis is largely what funds state prisons.
Now, when we're talking jails, who is typically in a jail? Who's being held there?
Well, about 60% are those who are awaiting trial, legally presumed innocent. They could be awaiting trial because it's a lengthy court proceeding. They might be facing felony charges. But many are simply too poor to post bail, or they might find themselves in jail regularly because of being picked up on the street for a minor offense.
Now, the U.S. Department of Justice estimated that local communities spent $22.2 billion on jails in the year 2011. Can you talk about the different factors that went into that number?
Sure. The Department of Justice uses information that the U.S. Census collects on expenditures at each county. And within those county expenditures, they take a look at various departments, such as education, healthcare, and corrections. And they derive the $22.2 billion figure by looking at correctional institutions or jails that are run at the county level. And so while that's a good estimation of the cost of jails to the sheriffs and the jail administrators that run the jail, we found that it's quite often that there are large expenses outside of jail budgets. So one of the largest can be health care that's provided to inmates. In large cities in particular, these are provided by public health departments or local public hospitals, and the cost of the care for an inmate can average about 10% in our study sample, so you'd be missing those costs. In other cases, there's some counties that pay for benefits for jail employees through a central county account, and the methodology where you take a look at the jail's budget will miss these expenses.
And it sounds like the tracking the money that goes to pay for jails can get a little tricky because it doesn't all come from the same pot, so we end up underestimating.
That's right. So in New York City, for example, or Dallas is similar, the cost of salaries for jail employees is in the jail budget, and that's all pretty straightforward. But the cost of health and hospital care is funded through an entirely different city budget. And then the cost of pensions and other fringe benefits for jail employees, and employees actually in all the city, are funded through a separate account. So you need to be looking at all these accounts to have the total true cost or true price of the jail.
So given all that, how much would you say that we're actually spending on jails in America?
It's hard to say. We found in our study sample that about a quarter, in a quarter of the jurisdictions, more than 20% of the cost was in outside agencies and was as high as 50% in New York City. It's difficult to extrapolate because we don't know if our sample is representative exactly, but to the extent it is, the cost of nationwide is surely close to $30 billion than it is, $22.2 billion.
How would you say these numbers are affecting the cities, the counties that have to pay for jails?
Well, on the one hand, in a sense, it doesn't. So, at the local level, county commissioners and budget officials and even jail administrators are well aware of this issue. But the reason that we think it's important to shine light on this is that there's increasing attention on jails and jail populations and the rising number of those in jails. And many cities and counties are looking to reduce the numbers of those in their jails. And that presents an opportunity because the savings afforded through the downsizing jails presents funds that can be redirected to other health and social services that might better meet the needs of many that are already in the jail today. But you can't get a handle of what that opportunity is for reinvestment without a true and accurate understanding of how much money is currently being spent today, and that's why this is relevant right now.
We're talking with Chris Henrikson from the Vera Institute of Justice about a new study about the true cost of jails. Turns out they're costing taxpayers more than we might expect. And Chris, you were talking about how it might be better to lower the population of those in jail and focus instead on things like health and social services. Is that the secret to lowering these jail costs, the incentive, the money, and getting people out of jails?
Well, the only way to safely reduce jail costs is to reduce the number in the jails. And as jails downsize and they attain levels of inmate declines at certain thresholds, there's opportunities to close down certain housing units. And so we've seen this in two of the sites in our study. So Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Springfield, Massachusetts, the jails there have downsized by more than 30%, and that afforded them the opportunity to close down the housing units, or with what are often called pods, which are the dormitories where the inmates reside in the evening. These housing units typically have about 60 beds. It varies by county, but typically about 50 or 60. And they're full-time staffed by one guard. And because jails are 24/7 operations, one post actually requires six employees for three shifts a day, and you need to double that to account for the vacation and training that's, of course, required for all employees. So once you reach that threshold of about 50 or 60, there's an opportunity to relieve approximately five or six employees, which is what we found in our study sample. And once you attain that level of savings, the question that counties and cities next need to deal with is, well, what should we do with these funds? Should they be returned to the general fund to fund other areas of government, or should they be spent elsewhere to address the needs of those that had formerly been in those housing units before they were closed?
Do you think we can have fewer people in jail without sacrificing some aspect of public safety?
Sure, and we've seen evidence to this. New York City and New York State are both heralded as sort of the leaders in criminal justice reform and the downsizing of prisons and jails. New York State has the prison population has declined by 30% over the past 15 years as the rate of crime rates have declined. And this is largely in part because the jail population and steps taken in New York City to reduce the correctional population, whilst, as has been widely reported, New York City is now safe as it's ever been.
We're talking right now with Chris Henrikson from the Vera Institute for Justice about the cost of jails in America. Chris is the lead author of a new report that finds jails are costing taxpayers more than they might expect. And we want to know your thoughts on this. What do you think about the cost of jails? Would you rather see some of that money spent elsewhere in your community? Or do you think it's a necessary investment, maybe a good one? And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking with Chris Henriksen from the Vera Institute for Justice about the cost of jails in America.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think we, or maybe your community, are spending too much on jails? What do you think should change? Do you think there should be more alternatives to incarceration in a jail? And if you are involved or have been involved with jails in any capacity, an inmate, an employee, somebody in the criminal justice system, interested in your thoughts on the matter as well. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we go to the phones now. We've got Jim on the line in Rice Lake. Hi, Jim.
Hi, I'm a criminal defense attorney, and I also teach business law at the Native American Community College. I just wanted to get your guest comment. There was a University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee extension study approximately 3 years ago that statistically showed that the United States had the highest rate of incarceration of any known state in the world, any known country in the world. Second was Rwanda. Third was Cuba. And of the 50 states they were based on per 100,000 population, the highest state of incarceration of any of the 50 states was Wisconsin, with Oklahoma being second. So that according to, and I believe the Milwaukee study was accurate, that according to this study, that the state of Wisconsin has the highest rate of incarceration of any known legal entity in the world. I want to know your guest comments. Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Jim, and thank you for giving us that context. Jim referencing a UW-Milwaukee study. What do you think about those numbers there, Chris?
So I know that he's quite right about how the United States compares with other countries, and it's not just developed Western nations, but all nations. The United States has by far the highest incarceration rate, and not only in terms of comparisons with other countries today, but we're actually at a point where incarceration has deviated quite a bit from what it looked like historically prior to the 1970s. With respect to Wisconsin, the rates of incarceration vary widely across 50 states. I'm not familiar with how those states rank, but it isn't. It's of course true then whichever the 50 states has the highest incarceration rate would, by extension, have the highest incarceration rate in the world.
Do you know why the United States has that distinction?
That's a very good question, and that many wrestle with, and there's really no one answer that's well known. There's been, ever since the 1970s, there's been increased interest in using the criminal justice system to dissuade and assist the use of drugs, the so-called war on drugs. In the 1990s, federal legislation and truth and sentencing legislation had the effect of increasing the lengths of time that people spend in prisons. It's going to vary by each state, and within each county within each state, the drivers of jail populations differ. But I think we're arriving at a point where both Republicans and Democrats are acknowledging that we're past a point of diminishing returns when it comes to the use of prison and jail to address our safety needs. And there's much wider interest in taking a look at how we use incarceration today than ever in recent memory.
All right. Well, thank you for that call. And we're going to go next to Kenneth joining us from Black River Falls. Hi, Kenneth.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, the Wisconsin DOC is trying to work at reducing the recidivism rate in corrections. But I think some of the problems is that you got to look at the socioeconomic factors that the individuals, when they're leaving the institution, they're being put into an area where they've, you know, committed their crimes or their offenses, and there's nothing for them. And, you know, the DOC can only do so much to provide them these tools to improve themselves, but, you know, when it all comes down to it, it's actually the individual that has to make the choice.
And Kenneth, what do you think about looking for alternatives to jail instead of going that route when you're trying to reduce recidivism?
Oh, I'm totally for treatment, because in a lot of facilities you have different housed inmates, you know, that are different class levels that, you know, you might have an alcoholic or drug offenders mixed in with murderers and other, you know, individuals that have higher crime rates or, you know, worse crimes. So I'd put for, you know, treatment and facility, you know, treatments and stuff like that.
All right. Well, thank you for your call, Kenneth. Appreciate you you're calling us. And Chris, Kenneth saying that it can be tough when people get out of jail. There may not be options for them that are going to keep them from going back. What do you think about that argument?
Oh, it's absolutely true. Corrections departments across the country, not only state corrections departments, but also many jails, particularly jails in larger cities and counties, have invested in programming that's been proven by research to effectively reduce rates of recidivism. Oftentimes, there's only small portions of correctional populations that are able to participate in programming, either for safety reasons or because of, you know, there's sometimes a limit to which participation can be mandated. But even still, reducing recidivism rates is only going to go so far at addressing mass incarceration, because it's not just always the choices of the individuals that are made, but also how the justice system responds. So whereas the response to an individual's choice, say for crime X, is today, you know, meted out with a prison sentence of 4 years, whereas opposed to several years ago, maybe it was 2 years, that has the effect of doubling the number in the jail for that for that crime. So it's about individual choices and helping people remediate, but it's also about how the justice system responds to crimes after they've occurred.
And Chris, just briefly as we wrap up, what are some success stories, alternatives to jails that are being tried out?
Well, in Albuquerque, New Mexico, in Bernalillo County, they've had great success in reducing jail populations, in part through things that seem obvious, administrative efficiencies, by funding new district attorney positions to expedite case processing, and working to reduce time time to conduct probation violation hearings, so people are in jail for less time while they're awaiting those hearings. But one front-end solution in that county is for the police department to, rather than make an arrest for certain crimes, to instead issue a citation, which is a civil penalty rather than a criminal penalty that could lead someone into jail.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
It was my pleasure.
That was Chris Hendrickson. He's the director of the Cost Benefit Analysis Unit at the Vera Institute of Justice and lead author of the new report, The Price of Jails: Measuring the Taxpayer Costs of Local Incarceration.